Care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'll reserve 3 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay, and I would remind both of you to take a breath every once in a while in case one of the judges has a question that they would like to pose to you since it's difficult with a teleconference. And Ms. Martin, you can begin whenever you're ready. I will let you know when your time has expired.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. Yes, may it please the Court, this is Kathleen Martin on behalf of the Commonwealth. This is a Commonwealth appeal from the Circuit Court of Virginia Beach. The defendant, was charged with second-degree murder. This is a murder that happened back in 1990, and he was living in Pennsylvania at the time that the Virginia Beach officers talked to him. In his motion to suppress, he questioned and asked that the Virginia Beach comments be suppressed, as well as comments he made to the Pennsylvania officers in a little bit after the Virginia Beach people talked to him. The trial court granted the motion with regard to the Pennsylvania officers, and that is what is before the court today on appeal. It's the Commonwealth's position that the trial court erred in its findings because the defendant's statements that he made were not made in response to interrogation. They were voluntary, thus they did not fall within the Miranda parameters, and that also they could be seen as reinitiating a conversation with the police officers. And there was a further argument that was made that the trial court erred in applying the exclusionary rule in this situation. With regard to the comments that the defendant made, he made two statements, as were reported by the Pennsylvania trooper, Nicewanger. And what he said was that, yes.
This is Judge Russell. My question is specific to Judge Lilly's finding. It seems to me that he found that we don't know exactly what Trooper Rogers asked at any given time, because Trooper Nicewanger testified that he didn't hear everything that was said. Given that, and given that it's the Commonwealth's burden, how does the Commonwealth overcome that evidentiary hole? Because obviously there are certain questions that if Trooper Rogers had asked would constitute custodial interrogation, while there are some questions he could ask that wouldn't.
Right. And I will just say, Judge Russell, that while I heard all of your question, you did sound kind of faint. So I don't know whether that's your system or you're not sitting close enough to the phone.
I'm moving close to the phone. Do you need to
hear anything? No, I did hear the question, but it was very faint. And so I think, I mean, yes, it's true that we don't have as much specific information about what exactly happened as would be good to have. But I think if we look sort of at the totality of the circumstances here, that what the defendant said in regard to, well, something to the effect of, it's terrible that people get away with this type of crime for a long time. I mean, that's really not all that incriminating, and it's not responsive to anything that might have been asked about the victim. I mean, it's just kind of a statement that comes out of nowhere, which is what the trooper said, that he sort of just blurted it out, and he didn't recall what came before or after because it was just kind of an odd statement. Now, I think that it's logical that if Trooper Rogers had been asking specific questions that would have triggered some sort of response about the crime or the victim, et cetera, that Trooper Nicewanger would have recalled those questions. He would have been listening closely, but he didn't hear everything that was said. He just heard these statements, and they just kind of struck him because they were so odd. They came out of nowhere.
Ms. Martin, it's Judge Russell again. Recognizing that that's one way to kind of spin Trooper Nicewanger's testimony, don't we owe deference to the trial court's conclusion regarding that?
Well, I think the trial court never really, I mean, you do owe deference, but the trial court never, I mean, he didn't, he just said that he was troubled because the other officer, Trooper Rogers, did not testify, and there wasn't a recording, there wasn't any kind of transcript, and so, you know, we don't know exactly what was said, but if we assume that that he was, the defendant was being questioned, and he was asked some specific question about, because he, the defendant said that the conversation was about living in Virginia Beach and about his being in the Navy, and this other trooper, I think, had been in the Navy. And so this comment about, well, it's terrible that people get away with things, I mean, that's just really not responsive to any of those things. And if he were questioned about, as the defendant said, specifically about the victim, and that's when he said, well, I don't want to talk about that, then if we sort of look at this in a continuum and we say, well, if he made his comments before that question was sort of asked, then he wasn't, the things that happened before that were really just about the Navy and living in Virginia Beach. They were really not interrogation. They weren't intended to elicit any kind of actual incriminating response. And the defendant didn't really have to respond to those things and to just say, well, it's terrible, people get away, or what do I do? You know, that, it's just really not interrogation. Now, if he was asked about the victim and he said, I don't want to talk, and then later he comes back and says, particularly the second thing, well, do you have any suggestions on how I get out of this? That's a reinitiation of the conversation, as it was in the Harrison case, where the defendant asked, well, what's going to happen to me? And so I think that if we look at it from those standpoints, that the trial court was just sort of being very, very careful, I think, and because he did say, well, it looks like, you know, they could have been blurted out, they could have been volunteered, but there was this conversation, and he was sort of really just honing in on the fact that the other officer didn't testify.
Ms. Martin, this is Judge Felton with a question. Are the findings that the trial judge in its letter of October the 8th, 2015, findings of fact as to whether or not, A, they were made, and B, whether they were made in response to questions?
Well, I mean, I think it's a finding of fact that these statements were made. I don't think the defendant has ever said, I did not make these statements, if that was the tenor of your question. So, yes, I think that these things, the statements the defendant said, you know, those things were made as statements. And I've sort of forgotten where I was going with this. I think that, and so I think that also, if we look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant, as we have to do in this instance, then I think we have to accept that the trial court found that Trooper Rogers did ask the defendant something about the victim. But again, we don't really know exactly where that happened in the conversation. I mean, the defendant never really offered any testimony about that either. That, you know, we were talking about this, and then they said this, and then I said this. I mean, there's no real time context here, and that's certainly a problem in this case. I hope that I've answered your question, Judge Felton.
Yeah, I was just in the letter. The trial court says the court has not proven. The Commonwealth has not proven by preponderance of evidence that the statements made by the defendant were voluntary, which would seem to indicate that he found that the statements were made, just not voluntarily.
Right, right. And I don't think, like I said, I don't think there's any question that these statements were made at some point during this conversation. We just don't know exactly the precise context in which they were made. And the court did say that you know, he says on their face they could have been volunteered, but then he went on and made some other comments because he was concerned that Trooper Rogers had not testified, and that seemed to be something that he was particularly concerned about. I think, you know, with regard to this case, the facts are what they are. And the Commonwealth believed that the trial court erred and noted this appeal. And unless the court has any other questions, I don't know that I have anything else to say at this point.
Counsel, I have a question. This is Judge Decker.
Yes.
it seems like there's a little bit of muddiness in Virginia law in terms of the standard for assessing whether an officer's words were designed to elicit an incriminating response. You've got the line of cases that are involved, Smith and Gates, and then you've got Commonwealth v. Quarles in the Supreme Court, which seems to basically focus primarily on the suspect's perception as opposed to the objective observer test, which exists in Gates and other cases. What's the correct standard?
I think that I don't remember that Quarles talked so much about the subjective standard. Although, I mean, if you sort of look at what was said there and the response that you got, you would sort of see that that's how it came out. But I do think that the other cases have talked about an objective standard, you know, and in many instances that's the standard that we use. And I think perhaps that's maybe a more logical standard in that, because we don't know precisely what's going on in the mind of the accused, whoever that might be. You know, he might see it one way and somebody else might see it another way, but if we're looking at what maybe, you know, and a guilty person might see it differently than an innocent person. So if we're looking at an objective person, I think that's probably a more reasonable standard. But I think that even in this case, you know, either way, still these questions were not intended to elicit an incriminating response. And from that standpoint, they were really not, it was not an interrogation kind of situation.
Thank you, counsel. You're coming up on your 3-minute warning if you want to stop.
That's all I think I'm going to say at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Okay. Mr. Broccoletti,
yes,
are you prepared? You ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Whenever you're ready, go right ahead.
All right. Well, I think we start from the premise that clearly Mr. Malik had invoked his right to counsel, and that the troopers from Pennsylvania were aware that he had invoked his right to counsel. And so I think that's our starting point. And then secondly, then when we look at the transcript and we look at the joint appendix and we look at the testimony, beginning with Mr. Malik, and this is on page 62, line 8, and the question was, and the entire conversation that occurred in the car was initiated by whom? His answer was, the detective that wasn't here, the one that was the driver. The other trooper? The other trooper, yes. And I think that's exactly where Judge Lilly was coming from, and Judge Russell also, when he hit the nail on the head with his question. Trooper Rogers was not there and was not, obviously did not testify. So when we take Mr. Malik's statement that the conversation occurred and was initiated by Trooper Rogers, then we have Trooper Nieswanger, and multiple times, as the trial court quoted, and as we quoted as well, for example, on page 49 of the appendix, they start talking about the conversation, how'd that begin? He goes, myself specifically, no, my partner had been talking to him about the Navy. Then he talks about, well, from what I could overhear. And then on page 50, we're asking him about the questions or the statements that are the subject matter of the motion to suppress, about where those statements occur, and he did not know where those occur. He wasn't sure about where those happen. And then on page... Yes, sir.
It's Judge Russell.
Yes, sir.
If the record established that all Trooper Rogers asked was, how did you end up in Virginia Beach, and a generic question about service in the Navy, would you agree that the two statements that are attributed to your client would not have been foreseeable in response to such questions?
If that was the extent of the statement or the conversation, yes, but I don't think that we can say that. And I think that's what Judge Lilly's problem was, and that's where the Commonwealth fails in its burden of proof. I think the record is clear, and Judge Lilly made a finding of fact that Trooper Nieswanger overheard some things. He was just along for the ride, so to speak, and he wasn't clear about, and I think he was very candid about things, such as on page 52, line 19, question, who began the conversation about the Navy? Was that your partner? And he said, I believe it was my partner. And how did that conversation begin? Answer, I don't really know. Likewise, on page 53, line 6, and do you recall the first thing that your partner may have said to him about his Navy life in Virginia Beach? I do not. Then on page 54, line 10, line 20 rather, what takes place prior to the time that the statements are made? What takes place? Answer, I don't know. So to answer your question, Judge Russell, we have no clue because Rogers wasn't there to testify about the circumstances surrounding the making of those statements, whether there was interrogation, whether it was the functional equivalent of interrogation like the Rhode Island burial speech, the Christian burial speech. We just don't know any of those things because Rogers wasn't there. And so under those circumstances, when Judge Lilly makes that finding of fact that Nieswanger is not in a position to hear everything, that he's just there along for the ride, and therefore the Commonwealth has failed in its burden of proof by not having Rogers there to specifically say these things, that's a finding that's binding and that this court gives great deference to, and it's clear that the Commonwealth had failed in its burden of proof by satisfying their preponderance burden.
Thank you.
So I think that's about all I have to say, unless you have any other further questions.
Counsel, I have one question is, in the context of the record before us, viewed in the light most favorable to your client, can we make a determination as to whether he made the statements before Trooper Rogers specifically mentioned JS or after?
No, ma'am, we can't make that determination because, again, that's on page 54, line 10, what we just talked about when we said what took place prior to the statements. And Nieswanger said, I don't know. They just stuck in my mind. I don't know. So we really can't put into context the sequence of events or the chronology of events. And, again, the Commonwealth filed a motion to reconsider, and Judge Lilly, not only in his written opinion, but then orally from the bench, which is also reflected in the joint appendix, was very clear the searching examination that he did of the record and of the trooper's testimony as well as Mr. Malik's testimony. And he very clearly tried to determine whether the Commonwealth had met its burden and very clearly found that it had. And Judge Decker, your question, again, just points up the problem with the Commonwealth's failure of proof and Judge Lilly's recitation of that because we just don't know the context, sequence, or chronology of events.
And that was the Commonwealth's burden, and from a standpoint of whether the statement was made before or after, that's pretty significant.
Yes, ma'am, it is, and we just don't know that, and that's their burden of proof, and they fail in that burden, and that's what Judge Lilly found, and that's what I asked the court to accept and give deference to.
Thank you, counsel.
Yes, ma'am, thank you.
Mr. Broccoletti, you've got about 9 more minutes. So.
you don't want to hear me drone on about the same subject over and over again. Thank you. Can I save it for my next case?
No, you don't. It doesn't get cumulative effect. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Thank you, though.
Assume you can finish in 6 minutes.
Yeah. We'll hold you to it the next one. Ms. Morton, you've got about 3 minutes.
I don't really have anything else to say, Your Honor. As I said, I think the facts in this case kind of just, they are what they are. And on behalf of the Commonwealth, we would ask that the trial court be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you.